Matter of Spirit, the Quarterly Justice Journal of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center, Spring 2011 issue on the status of women.
Patriarchy, a System Past Its Prime, by Gretchen Gundrum. Patriarchy, asserts author Sue Monk Kidd, is neither men nor the masculine principle. It is rather a system in which that principle has become distorted. For 2,500 years, the patriarchal system was the very air that everyone breathed. Males were privileged in society. Fathers knew best, and the social and economic hierarchies put men at the top, women next, followed by slaves, animals, plants, and inanimate objects. This unquestioned social order seemed to be divinely ordained. Although both were created in God's image, man was created first. Woman was a derivative, fashioned from his rib. The Bible and Greek philosophy are two of the root causes for the entrenchment of the patriarchal system in Western culture. God created the sexes of male and female, but humans have constructed gender, the roles that women and men play in society. Religious literature is an important unifier of consciousness. It reflects and reinforces the beliefs and values that ruling elites hold dear. In the biblical creation story, God gave naming rights to Adam. Whoever has naming rights controls the culture. The writers, redactors, and editors of the Bible were likely only males, since women did not have access to education. Thus, men controlled the symbol system and made decisions about which stories were the inspired word of God. They chose masculine God language and God images over feminine ones, and whether intending it or not, clearly communicated female inferiority. There are feminine and gender-neutral images and metaphors of the divine in Scripture. For example, El Shaddai, Sophia, God's wisdom, God is a mother hen protecting her chicks, God is rock and living water. But masculine images of God continue to dominate our consciousness and our prayers. The creation account explains that evil came into the world through a woman's curiosity and a desire for more knowledge. The snake seduced Eve, but she gave in to temptation and brought Adam along for the ride. By listening to the voice of his wife, Adam got into a lot of trouble with God. Aristotle, the Greek philosopher who shaped Western scientific thought and impacted the theological understanding of Augustine and Thomas Aquinas, assumed as a given that women are incomplete and damaged human beings of an entirely different order than men. Greek mythology made another woman responsible for unleashing evil in the world. Her name was Pandora. Religious shapes culture, and culture reinforces religious messages. One subtle visual reinforcement of female inferiority can be found in the Sistine Chapel. Michelangelo's magnificent painting of the creation of man has become iconic in Western consciousness. The powerful creative God, the old man with the beard, reaches across the heavens to touch the tip of Adam's finger, thus transmitting creative authority to him. God and man are almost in the same plane of the fresco. In a smaller, different place in the vault of the Sistine Chapel, Michelangelo depicts Eve's creation as coming out of the sleeping Adam. Here, however, Eve is a supplicant, with bowed posture and hands folded toward God. God's right hand is slightly extended in a benevolent way toward her, but he doesn't touch her. Woman is lower, and beseeching. The visual captures woman's need to please, the ingrained tendency to seek approval and permission. This is a form of internalized oppression, which undercuts woman's ability to value her own experience and use her voice with confidence. Michelangelo's art reflects and promulgates theological thinking, thus supporting patriarchy. With the two powerful forces of biblical teaching and classic philosophy undergirding Western understanding, the stage for women's sense of internalized inferiority was set. If a person gets a recurrent message that she's not good enough, smart enough, capable enough, shouldn't think or act in certain ways, she will believe it. Hierarchies with men at the top became entrenched in the church, family, marriage, workplaces, and all systems of thought. Men dominated and women were dependent. Women needed the protection of powerful males to survive and thus unwittingly colluded in their own diminishment. In the 19th and 20th centuries, however, societal changes brought educational and economic opportunities for women. Women gained a sense of perspective and equipped with the skills to study and excavate history, including the ancient languages that the Bible was originally written in. They found voices and authority to question the status quo. The patriarchal system would never quite be the same. In Christoph and Wu Dunn's compelling text, Half the Sky, the authors note that gender inequality in poor countries is often lethal in a way that it is not in America. When girl babies aren't as valued as much as their brothers, they don't receive the same medical treatment, they don't get as much food, and they are aborted just because of their sex. The authors focus on three abuses flowing out of female devaluing: sex trafficking and forced prostitution, gender-based violence, including honor killings and mass rape, and maternal mortality, which still needlessly claims one woman a minute. While some of the stories are horrendous, there are also hopeful signs of improvement in the status of women as educational opportunities increase, access to medical care improves, and women achieve economic success through micro-lending endeavors. Supported by other budding female entrepreneurs, women gain respect as they become more financially independent. They are also more protected from abuse. As women become better educated and empowered around the world, something important is happening to religious imagery and to relationships between women and men. There are signs of a growing sense of the sacred feminine in religious thought and language. Earth is our mother. Earth is our home. Our task is to protect Earth, not dominate it. Women and men are realizing their call to co-creativity with the divine energy. Networked through economies, technology, and instantaneous communication across the globe, and even in outer space, we need each other. The patriarchal system no longer serves our evolving understanding of who we are. Through the power of mutual respect and partnership, we can support each other in becoming all we are meant to be by divine intention. May it be so. Men as allies. There are many stories of men working creatively to end discrimination and violence against women and to promote gender equality. Here are just a few. The White Ribbon Campaign. 20 years ago, a group of Canadian men decided they needed to speak out against domestic violence. They chose the white ribbon as a symbol. Within 6 weeks, 10,000 men across Canada wore a white ribbon. Today, the campaign is in over 55 countries. Ninth grader Richard Lyles recently wore a white ribbon at his Virginia high school. My mom, my aunts, and my grandmother have all been victims of abuse, said Lyles. If I can break the chain of generational abuse, it will be better for me, my wife, and my kids. Men, I'm talking to you. Dallas Cowboys football player Jay Ratliff recently recorded a public service announcement aimed at raising awareness about sex trafficking. It has recently come to my attention that American children are being bought and sold for profit and pleasure, and I'm mad. Men, I'm talking to you, Ratliff states somberly in the ad. The father of two young girls, Ratliff plans to recruit other teammates to join the campaign. Together for Transformation. Both men and women are suffering in this system, and they need to join hands to bring about transformative change. Those are the words of a joint statement, Together for Transformation, a call to men and boys, drafted by a group of men from 17 countries in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East, who recently finished a 2-year training program on gender and nonviolence, organized by the Fellowship of Reconciliation. We strongly speak out against gender inequality and discrimination towards women in all forms, and show our deep commitment towards gender-sensitive, active nonviolence as a way of life.
The Story of Mama J by Sadia Hamid. Sadia Hamid is the Raise Hope for Congo campaign manager with the Enough Project. I will never forget Mama J. When you first meet her, it is beyond belief that this woman greeting you with big smiles and cheerful song has experienced trauma that most of us barely have the strength to hear about, let alone survive. Yet, Mama J was not just surviving. She was living, healing, and rebuilding. I met Mama J at a vocational training program set up by a network of women's human rights groups called Synergy, based in Goma, North Kivu. Synergy has provided urgent medical care, legal assistance, and vocational training for countless survivors of sexual violence in the eastern region of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. A brutal war has been raging in the region for over a decade, claiming close to 6 million lives due to killings, displacement, preventable disease, famine, and sexual violence. During the course of this deadly conflict, armed groups use rape as a weapon of war to gain control over mineral-rich territories, exploiting Congo's natural wealth for their own personal gain. The price paid by civilians is shocking. Attacks are deliberate and well-planned. Villages are burned. Men are killed or taken as forced labor. Children captured as child soldiers or orphaned. And women brutally assaulted, stripped of their dignity, family, livelihood, and home. Mama J, a mother of seven, was asleep in her bed next to her husband and children when 7 armed men forcibly entered her home. She watched as her husband and 2 young children were slain in front of her, after which she was subjected to repeated brutalities by 4 of the armed men. She thinks it lasted for hours. Desperately in need of urgent medical care, she fled to Goma on foot with her remaining 5 children. She was treated at the hospital and given a safe space to recover. It was here that she found out that the rapes had resulted in HIV. I was moved by the incredible strength and resilience that she demonstrated, certain that I would never manage it in her place. She talked about physically, mentally, and emotionally recovering from the terrifying violations she sustained. How she prays not to die from HIV, as her children have no other guardian. How she still deeply grieves the deaths of her husband and children. How she misses them, how much she loved them, and how she has no idea what home will be like without them. She asked me to tell her story to anyone who would listen, that she was one of thousands of Congolese women who are surviving grave violations, and that anyone who learns about this conflict should speak out for peace and justice. I hugged her, and I promised I would. She whispered to me that we would meet again in her village, in her home, that she dreamt of that day, and believed it would come. She then took my hand and sang and danced with me until we left. Who could ever forget Mama J? More than 10 years after the UN Security Council's passage of Resolution 1325 on women, peace, and security, the women of Congo are still being brutalized by armed conflict with little reprieve in sight. Stories of the horrors endured by women like Mama J make it obvious that the international community has not yet delivered any form of real peace or security to Congo's women. The peace that Congo's women need is not simply words written on paper or agreed to by warmongers. They need a peace that returns their sense of security and peace of mind, a peace that eliminates the stigma of surviving rape and reinstates them to their rightful position in society. If we are committed to helping deliver this kind of peace, we need coordinated action from stakeholders at the national, regional, and international level. Action to remove the economic incentives to wage war, replacing them with incentives favoring peace and stability, such as a mineral certification scheme that eliminates the world market for conflict minerals sold by war criminals. Action that removes war criminals from the ranks of the armed forces and submits them to swift punishment under the law. Action reducing threats posed by armed militias lingering in Congo's bush. Action that ensures women have a seat at the decision-making table and are able to ensure the delivery of a peace that truly returns peace back to them. This is the kind of peace that Mama J dreams of, and this is the kind of peace that we have the responsibility of helping to deliver for Congo and its women. Demand conflict-free electronics. Tell the biggest electronic companies that you want death, rape, and violence driven by the illicit trade in conflict minerals to stop. Visit www.raisehopeforcongo.org to take action. International Violence Against Women Act, or the IVAWA. IVAWA would make addressing violence against women a diplomatic priority for the United States and integrate anti-violence efforts across U.S. foreign assistance programs. Visit www.ipjc.org to ask your senator to co-sponsor IVAWA when it is introduced in the 112th Congress. Growing security. In 1993, a group of Honduran women, fed up with domestic violence in their community, decided to do something about it. Form a coffee cooperative. Quote, "We realized that until women are economically empowered, they will not be empowered to escape abuse for good," said Dula Marlin Contreras. Today, more than 250 women grow and sell coffee through the Coordinadora de Mujeres Campesinas de La Paz. They have increased their economic independence. Domestic violence rates have also reduced drastically within the community.
Women Farmers Cultivate Abundance by Danielle Nirenberg. Danielle Nirenberg is senior researcher at the World Watch Institute and co-project director of the Nourishing the Planet project. In the middle of Kibera, the largest slum in sub-Saharan Africa in Nairobi, Kenya, where nearly 1 million people live in an area just over half the size of Manhattan's Central Park, there is a surprising amount of abundance. Appearing among the makeshift shacks, the street vendors selling tennis shoes and food, the piles of trash, and the herds of goats, are lush home gardens sprouting spinach, kale, and tomatoes. These farms don't look like the corn and soybean crops we see across the American Midwest or Brazil. Instead, the food from the Kibera farms are peeking out of the tall sacks filled with soil, and they are grown by landless women's groups. These self-proclaimed self-help groups, made up mostly of women, are present all over Kenya, giving youth, women, and other groups the opportunity to organize, share information and skills, and ultimately improve their well-being. It is an important service, especially when one realizes that the majority of the world's food producers are actually women. At the same time, women receive less than 10% of credit provided to male farmers, and in many parts of the world aren't allowed to own land, get credit, or make financial and banking transactions. Despite research that shows that women are much more likely than men to invest their improved income back into their families and the community, they receive only about 5% of global agriculture extension services. Yet, the benefits of investing in women farmers can be found all over the world, even in the most hopeless-seeming of places like Kibera. Currently, more than 1,000 women and their families are growing food in the vertical gardens, something that Red Cross International recognized during 2007 and 2008 when there was conflict in the slums of Nairobi. No food could come into these areas, but most residents did not go without food because so many of them were growing crops in sacks, vacant land, or elsewhere. Even though the people here don't own the land where they live and work, making their existence a very tenuous one, and they can be often evicted from their homes, most of them wooden shacks with tin roofs, people are thriving. And more than that, they are helping people around them thrive in unexpected ways. On a vacant lot just across from Kibera, a group of 20 farmers, again made up mostly of women, are growing traditional African vegetables, including spider plant, squash, and amaranth. With the help of the organization Urban Harvest, the farmers are not only growing these vegetables to eat and sell, but they are also becoming a source of seed for rural farmers. Using very small plots of land, about 50 square meters, and double-dug beds, the farmers can raise seeds very quickly. Fast-growing varieties like amaranth and spider plant take only about 3 months to produce seeds, making about 3,000 Kenyan shillings in profit. "We came to assist urban farmers in Kibera with their food needs at home," says Nancy Karanja, Regional Program Coordinator for Urban Harvest. "But they are now not only able to produce enough food for their houses, but also some to sell. The money they get from selling is helping to pay school fees, medical bills, and also to support their neighbors and relatives, even those living in the rural areas. In less than ideal circumstances, and with limited support, these women are using agriculture to sustain themselves and their community. Their story just begins to hint at the potential of women farmers to feed the world." UN Women. Women and girls globally have a new champion at the United Nations. "We are here to serve half the world," said Michelle Bachelet, executive director of UN Women and former president of Chile. UN Women, the new agency dedicated to gender equality and the empowerment of women, officially began its work on January 1, 2011. UN Women will significantly boost UN efforts to promote gender equality, expand opportunity, and tackle discrimination around the globe, according to Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. The agency emerged from an agreement by member states that more energy and resources must be focused on promoting equal rights and opportunities for women. UN Women consolidates four existing parts of the UN system, dedicated to the advancement of women, and provides additional resources to accelerate progress on realizing the rights of women worldwide. The agency has a minimum annual budget of $500 million. "This is a time of great promise," said Bachelet. "We have an historic opportunity to accelerate the achievement of what champions of gender equality have worked toward for years." The work of UN Women will center around five priorities: expanding women's voice, leadership, and participation in all sectors; ending violence against women; strengthening implementation of the Women's Peace and Security Agenda; enhancing women's economic empowerment, security, and rights; and making gender equality priorities central to national and local planning, budgeting, and statistics. The agency has outlined an ambitious 100-day action plan in each of these areas. Learn more at www.unwomen.org.
Co-designing water solutions. Beth Robertson is a research fellow at Women's Earth Alliance. Women in Mbilia, Ghana, and women all over the world are the cornerstones of their communities. They shoulder the burden of water harvesting, spending countless hours fetching and managing water for drinking, agriculture, and cooking. Local women are also key to improving access to their communities. In 2010, two powerful women leaders from Ghana, Florence Idrisu and Flera Mununi, participated in a training through the Global Women's Water Initiative. They were introduced to four different area-appropriate technologies designed to address issues of water and sanitation. Following the training, these women leaders developed an action plan to construct a rainwater harvesting system that would serve the women's dormitory at their local high school. Florence and Valera chose Mbilia High School for their project because, like many schools across Africa, it was not equipped with ample water facilities. Students and teachers would often have to bring water to school or fetch water during class time, limiting time devoted to their studies. Florence and Valera's pilot project brought tremendous change to Mbilia, decreasing the hours that female students have to walk in search of water. The female dormitory at Mbilia High School now has a complete rainwater harvesting system that serves 210 female students, providing them improved access to potable drinking water at the school. Today, Florence and Valera continue to spread knowledge of low-cost, effective solutions to inadequate sources of water in other areas in their community. Safe drinking water is a human right, and the participation of women in conceiving technologies to address issues of water and sanitation is essential. The Global Women's Water Initiative, GWWI, a program of Women's Earth Alliance in partnership with Crabgrass, embraces the idea that local women leaders who understand the needs of their communities merely need the resources, confidence, and training to inspire change and improve the health of their communities. GWWI holds capacity-building trainings throughout Africa to equip local women leaders with technology training, networking support, and seed funding to launch sustainable water projects in their communities. Access to fresh water and sanitation does not only improve the health of a family, but it also provides an opportunity for girls to go to school and for women to use their time more productively. Women are the stewards of their natural resources in their communities. Therefore, they hold the key to improving access to safe drinking water. Florence and Fuller's model succeeded because of its bottom-up, grassroots nature. Top-down, dependency-driven development solutions have failed communities too many times. Co-designing solutions based on local vision rather than outside wants are the foundation for sustainable development. It is important to invest in existing leadership and the knowledge of women who know what their communities need most. This approach avoids the pitfalls of top-down practices and outsider-generated attempts at assistance that can fall and even reinforce damaging dynamics. For sustainable development to take root, we must rely on the local environmental stewards and community caretakers to identify and co-design solutions that address issues of water and sanitation. Local women understand the needs of their community. All they need are the resources and confidence to design solutions and engineer change. For more information, visit www.womensearthalliance.org. Time poverty. It is estimated that women and children in Africa alone spend approximately 40 billion hours each year fetching and carrying water, a figure equivalent to a year's labor for the entire workforce of France. This results in time poverty, limiting the productive potential of women and the time their daughters can devote to studies. Walking for water, 3.7 miles. That's the average distance women and children walk each day to collect water in Asia and Africa. Walking for Water is an awareness and fundraising event where school children walk 3.7 miles carrying 1.5 gallons of water in their backpacks. The event, started by the Dutch NGO Aqua for All in 2003, has spread across the globe. Walks for Water take place around March 22nd, World Water Day. In 2010, 18,000 students raised $1.6 million for water relief organizations. Aqua for All has kits available to download to organize your own event. www.walkingforwater.eu.
Miracle in Cambodia by Kathy Moorfield. Kathy Moorfield is a spiritual director and retreat director in Seattle and in Cambodia, where she and her husband John stay for several months every year. Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. Matthew 15:28. The new preschool in Phang Nga, Cambodia, is in its second year. 3 years ago, a preschool there was unimaginable. Today, it is a reality because of the perseverance and tenacity of one woman, Prak Sre Nyong. Like the Canaanite woman in Matthew's Gospel, who demanded what was right and just for her child, Sre Nyong wouldn't give up her dream to provide a head start for children in her impoverished village in rural Cambodia. Sre Nyong was 11 years old when she started first grade. Her education was punctuated with long absences because her parents needed her help with the younger children and farming. Despite these obstacles, she completed school and was able to attend a 2-year vocational school run by Salesian Sisters in Phnom Penh. After graduation, Mary Knoll hired Sre Nyong to work with children with HIV/AIDS in Phnom Penh. She eventually became the head preschool teacher in that program, but never forgot the children in her village. They were always in her heart and mind, and she wanted them to have something she never had, a head start in life and a sound education. She lobbied the elementary school principal in her village for a preschool whenever she visited. She eventually wore him down, and he said yes, he would start a preschool, hire a government teacher, and enroll all the preschool children in the village if he had the space for it. Could Sre Nyong help with this? Sre Nyong lives in one room in a run-down area of Phnom Penh with her younger brother, whom she brought to Phnom Penh to educate. They barely scrape by with very little money for food, clothing, and transportation. But this didn't stop Sre Nyong. She began to talk to everyone about her dream and the need for a small building to make this possible. I shared her story in a letter with family and friends, and one day a friend of a friend called and said that she and her husband wanted to help Sre Nyong build the preschool. Others offered generous donations to furnish and supply the classroom and cover training expenses for the new teacher. The entire village joined in. The parents cleared the land, and laborers in the village built the school. The principal hired Karane, a government-trained teacher, and sent her to Phnom Penh for a month to learn from Sre Nyong about pre-literacy and other activities, and to make lesson plans and create materials for the new school. The principal and assistant principal, village chief, and community members helped Karane and Sre Nyong set up the classroom, and the preschool opened in November 2009. When we asked Sre Nyong this year how the preschool was going, her face lit up, and she told us that it was doing better than she had ever dreamed. The first grade teacher told her that the children, last year's preschool graduates, were more advanced than any class she'd ever taught. They knew how to hold a pencil, make shapes, use scissors and crayons, listen, and cooperate. They were learning the Cambodian alphabet and characters in the first week of school. Only 13% of Cambodian children participate in pre-primary education, and most of these are from wealthy or middle-class families. Sre Nyong, with passion, determination, and perseverance, has made pre-primary education possible for all of the children in Phang Nga Village. Creating opportunities. In the villages surrounding Suchitoto, El Salvador, young women graduating from high school find very limited opportunities for employment or further education. Jobs are a problem, says Sister Margaret Jane Kling, CSJP. I read the want ads, and there is some work available, but so many want English. 27-year-old Noemi dreams of studying tourism at the local technical school, but her lack of English proficiency is a barrier. Noemi attends the advanced English classes offered by Sister Margaret Jean at the Centro Arte para la Paz in Suchitoto. At least this is a step in the direction of my dreams, she said. Young people here just need opportunities, said another student, 21-year-old Rosaura. Her mother, who has a third-grade education, has encouraged her children to stay in school. Equipped with her advanced English skills, Rosaura recently received a scholarship to study psychology at the Technical University in San Salvador.
In service for justice. It's so easy to fall into a trap of hopelessness when you're reading about the tragedies and horrific conditions which women and children are dealing with around the world, says Clara Leeways, a senior at Seattle Preparatory School. But nothing is going to happen if the whole world sits back and waits. The most important thing is just to take action. Clara took action when she traveled to the Dominican Republic in June 2009 with 10 other students as part of a service trip organized by Education Across Borders. The students lived with host families and built homes in Batty Libertad, a community of Haitian migrant workers and their families in the Dominican Republic. The experience was so profound, she went back in 2010. I had formed these unconditional bonds with the people, she says. There was no way I couldn't go back. One of these bonds was with a 6-year-old girl named Emily. Clara and Emily played games together, and Emily stayed close to Clara as she worked. One particularly hot day, after strenuous work, digging foundations and mixing cement, Clara went to refill her water bottle, only to find out that the jug was empty. I wasn't feeling well, so I sat down on this rock and was very upset. Thoughts of going home raced through her mind, and right then I was looking down and I saw this hand with a cup of water. It was Emily. She was offering me her ration of water. Emily didn't want to accept the water, knowing that it was Emily's. Clean drinking water is scarce and rationed in Batty Libertad. I ended up drinking the water, and I know that a cup of water couldn't make me feel better, but it was the action of her giving it to me that was really profound. It showed that the littlest things make the biggest difference. When Clara first went to the Dominican Republic, she was oriented toward service. Now she wants to spend the rest of her life working for justice and peace, because there is hope.
Maternal Health, Learning from Others, by Mary M. Hennigan, MPH. Statistics are great for sounding an alarm about how bad things are for children and mothers around the globe. 53% of children in Malawi are too short, stunted, for their age. 210 women out of 100,000 of Ghanaian women die during childbirth. But what about the 47% of Malawian kids who are growing at a normal rate, or the other women in Ghana who survive childbirth? The question that merits asking is, what are some mothers and children doing differently from others that helps them stay alive and thrive? In the field of health, Parents of healthy children or mothers with successful pregnancies are called positive deviants because their behavior deviates from others with the same level of income and the same access to food and services. Unlike their peers, positive deviants decide to take preventative malaria treatments while pregnant, get prenatal care, eat better while pregnant, and exclusively breastfeed their babies until the age of 6 months. So, what pushes some women to adopt these life-giving behaviors and not others? We all know from our personal experiences that knowing the right thing to do is not a guarantee that we'll do it. The women that Catholic Relief Services, CRS, works with around the world are just like us. They struggle with putting into practice some very fundamental behaviors. To help them, CRS is investigating the barriers that prevent some women from doing the positive behaviors and finding ways for them to learn from the positive deviants within their communities. In Malawi, CRS is developing a network of thousands of volunteers, including fathers, focused on peer learning. These volunteers are able to share what the positive deviant households do and address some of the traditional beliefs that prevent people from adopting positive behaviors. For example, one key barrier to promoting infant feeding in Malawi is the cultural belief that a malnourished child is the result of one parent being unfaithful to another. Malnutrition is therefore considered a household matter, not a community problem. The network of volunteers has been able to break down the myth of malnutrition and engage the whole community on maternal and child nutrition. These complementary feeding and learning sessions help mobilize communities to take action to improve maternal and child health and teach caregivers how to better prepare and preserve food. A similar community-based approach is undertaken in Honduras, where CRS work has shown that the number of deaths during childbirth can be greatly decreased simply by involving the community in supporting women to give birth with trained birth attendants. In Ghana, where women tend to give birth at home, CRS is facing an additional challenge: how to encourage women to deliver at a health center with trained nurses without alienating the well-respected elderly birth attendants that the community is used to. Even though the attendants are untrained and ill-equipped to handle obstetric emergencies, they hold a place of importance in the community. Instead of pushing them aside, CRS and the community leaders are finding ways of involving them during both the pregnancy and during transportation to the health center when women give birth. While knowledge may be powerful, practice is essential for maternal and child health. Learning and modeling the strategies of positive deviants can lead to big improvements in the lives of other women, their children, and their households. After all, it's not usually the rock star or the fancy lecture on health that motivates us to do something. We're more likely to follow what our peers are doing. Sometimes we just need help in recognizing who the positive peers are.
Reflection process. Invite a small group for contemplation and conversation about the status of women. Ask them to read or listen to this issue of Amos prior to the gathering. Setup. Arrange chairs for participants around a small ritual table. Put on the table a cloth, candle, and symbols or pictures of women. Reader. Now Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, "Woman, You are set free from your ailment." When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day." Jesus answered him and said, "You hypocrites! Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham and Sarah, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?" When he said this, all the opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things he was doing. From the Gospel of Luke. Let's take some quiet time to reflect on this reading in light of the stories of the global status of women in this issue of Amos. During the quiet, I invite you to reflect on the status of women in your family, neighborhood, nation, and global community. What continues to keep women bent over and unable to stand tall today? Consider your own role and situation. What one decision can you make personally or communally to help ensure gender equality? After the quiet, invite participants to share on these questions. One reason women are bent over and unable to stand tall today, or one decision you can make personally or communally to help ensure gender equality. After each person shares, I'll respond by saying, "Woman, you are set free." Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center pages. Latina Conference. 160 Latinas from 25 cities proved that si se puede. On March 5th, 160 Latinas gathered in Sunnyside, Washington, for the first Justice for Women Latinas Connected for Change Conference, co-sponsored by the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center and Nuestra Casa. These inspiring Latinas from 25 cities across Washington State filled the room with energy to discuss personal and community power to create social change. The women supported, motivated, and urged each other to act for justice. The conference concluded with a lively sing-along and the women committing to do work that will benefit their communities. Addressing Human Trafficking. From the streets to the classrooms, hotels, and skies, IPJC and the Northwest Coalition for Responsible Investment work to end human trafficking. Monthly vigils are held in downtown Seattle, St. Joseph Residence, and Holy Names Convent in Los Gatos. Webinars for students on trafficking debuted in March. Young adults discussed forced labor in recent justice cafes. Northwest CRY and a coalition of shareholders moved Delta Airlines to adopt the code to protect children from sexual tourism. Hyatt Hotels responded positively to Northwest CRY's request to adopt a human rights policy that prohibits child labor, protects children from sexual exploitation, and prevents the use of its hotels for human trafficking. Join us in this effort. Participate in or organize a monthly vigil. Thank Delta Airlines and Hyatt Hotels for their leadership in addressing human trafficking. Jubilee Economics, Fear and Greed versus Generosity and Joy. IPJC provided a workshop for Protestant ministers on the scriptural and spiritual foundation for understanding economic justice, presented by Daryl Grothaus. Journey to Justice Day. Over 80 people gathered from 9 parishes for a Journey to Justice Day in February. The day included an opportunity to be with people from 7 local and national Catholic Campaign for Human Development sponsored projects. Consider your parish sponsoring a Just Faith group. Celebrate with us! IPJC's 20th Anniversary Dinner, April 12, 2011, at Seattle University. When you join us for our anniversary dinner, you make possible corporate responsibility ministry with over 25 corporations annually, Justice Circles, grassroots community organizing in Spanish and English, workshops for schools, parishes, and community groups on multiple topics, Parenting for Peace and Justice Program, Justice Cafes, community justice and spirituality program for young adults, national and global, resource material and publications on a diversity of issues, Our Justice Journal, A Matter of Spirit, distributed to 4,000, Advocacy Tools, coordinating meetings and federal advocacy online, web resources, speakers and conferences held around the Northwest, and so much more. Junior High Webinars. Over 100 students from Holy Family Kirkland and St. Anthony Renton participated in our pilot webinar on human trafficking. The webinar is a way for schools from different cities to exchange with one another through the use of technology. Students learned about the issues of children working in the cocoa fields and wrote letters to the chocolate companies to address the issue of child labor. Call us to schedule a webinar in any city. Stations of the Cross in Spanish. If you are looking for Spanish materials or would like to have a bilingual opportunity for your faith community, this resource is available in English as well. Immigration Workshops. Call us to schedule a workshop for your parish, 206-223-1138, or ipjc@ipjc.org. A Matter of Spirit is a publication of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. Sponsoring communities include Adrian Dominican Sisters, Oregon Province Jesuits, Sisters of the Holy Names of Jesus and Mary, U.S. Ontario Province, Sisters of Providence, Mother Joseph Province, Sisters of St. Francis of Philadelphia, Sisters of St. Joseph of Peace, and Tacoma Dominicans. Affiliate communities include Benedictine Sisters of Cottonwood, Idaho, Benedictine Sisters of Lacey, Benedictine Sisters of Mount Angel, Religious of the Sacred Heart, Sinsinawa Dominicans, Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet, Sisters of St. Mary of Oregon, and Ursuline Sisters of the Roman Union. Our editorial board for this issue included Judy Byron, OP, Gretchen Gundrum, PhD, Alejandra Guillen, Linda Haydock, SNJM, Vince Herberholt, Pat Higgins, Deacon Bob Huber, Maria Ochoa, and Beth Taylor, CSJP. Our editor was Susan Francois, CSJP. Layout of the print edition was done by Michael Schwindeller. This audio recording was read by Chris Hillman, Patty Leanweber, Sister Pat Daly, and Susan Francois. Visit our website at www.ipjc.org.